An Animated Life, Chapter 5, A Nearly Perfect Perpendicular Parallax. Please support Distilled Waters, a mighty cause project against hopelessness and homelessness. It is essentially an emergency for the purposes of sustaining life and being able to work. Thank you. All rights, including the right to reproduce this book in any way, shape, or form, belong to the author. No reproduction in whatever form or manner may be done without the prior consent of the author and publisher. An Animated Life. Copyright Edulogics. All rights reserved. A Nearly Perfect Perpendicular Parallax. As ascent must follow the beaten path of whatever being naturally bestows it to integrate every essential pathway functional, there are implicit preoccupation to life explicit distinction must subsequently preserve. The sun does not burn. And this may be difficult to understand based on what we have been taught in physics. If you look up the dictionary definition of burn, you will find several, one of which is that of irradiation effects. The sun never burned. If the sun burned, we will all be dead, or rather necessarily, we could never have existed and we will never exist. The term sunburn must consequentially be unscientific and ignorant. Subsequently, we can do more physics on the subject. This brings us to the close analysis of non-ionizing radiation like visible light, which must be made necessary in vectored spaces of causation. Separating this from artificially induced light such as light rays from a flashlight or rays for physics experimentation becomes important. These two are simply not the same. Furthermore, even Albert Einstein made a horrible mistake in the analysis of such, which will be discussed in later chapters. How do you ever get something that does not naturally burn but owns its sustaining energy to appear as if it burns? You focus it much the same way Einstein focused light to analyze it in his relativity theories. You do this as he did without paying the true price for the source. You separate the effect from its causation, neglecting to expose the fact that it had to be focused and streamlined to no symmetry in order that it may be made measurable. An example of how you can focus light from the sun to start a fire is that of using a magnifying lens and focusing it on the object you want burned. Over the course of time, the sun had managed to do the opposite of burn, that is, it never loses itself or aspects of itself like outer layer or such. Itself sustains efficiently instead. Natural light relative to its source has skewed symmetry, that is, it is anti-symmetric and unfocused in its vector space. Artificial light, on the other hand, must know symmetry and other necessities, which will be discussed in Chapter 10 of this book. Here we take another experience from my time in homelessness. Lethargy of a world away from a deeply diminished point, that very same point in the tangential diagram in the last chapter, the sun, surrounded by darkening blue skies on a nearly perfect perpendicular parallax viewed with the naked eye, held the confirmation of a much-needed space theory. Envisioning it for simplicity, it's the view of space and land meeting, the sun between them, which caused the atmosphere to darken in the middle of the day for a little while. A metaphoric description is that of the disillusionment of the imagination lacking in intelligence, that the sun goes down the mountain, but rather than the sun at that very point in space broke through the mountain, having experienced a consequential infraction. The perpendicular parallax produced a glossy dark diffused effect aligned in near perfectly lateral straight form on the surfaces of the paved road. It is as if the sun and the parallel road actually met. That is, they had the appearance of glossily dark scattered light aligned atop a leveled plane, all in trials for linearity. It lingered in my mind hilariously that this must be the parallel evolution scientists have been speaking of relative to all of humankind. More hilariously induced is the notion of perpendicular evolution in trials for linearity within the limits of XY coordination eastward. But the reality was nothing hilarious. The point was of zero dimensionality, time manifesting in space within further dimensionality limits and eventual integration. But unlike the chanced parallax witnessed by someone in expectation of such as I was, the newly archived theory by the very same observer is divergent in its trails, against convention. It is the direction of the divergence which makes a new space theory inevitable. Was the parallel space against the perpendicular parallax authentic in relativity? What is the significance of the parallax and the parallel diffusion effect? There was a lingering of the effect of an expected phenomenon happening in real time which to this observer seem relative from space to space, all theories relating time to space narrowing within all reasonable premises. Why were they narrowing, harrowing for linearity in a constantly expanding vacuous universe? The first thing we must do is to ensure the necessary implication for the negation resulting from the consequential infraction. We do this by establishing dot product relativity for our existential in its vector space and any possible field of complex numbers, that is, all absurd relative in possible probabilistic space. We also ensure the upper part of the point diagram in the last chapter knows implication while the lower part of the diagram, the X, moves westward at the base level. The upper must encounter consequential infraction stemming from its implicit implication of its necessity. This is because they are real-time multidimensional vectorization made experiential. We must imply the implicit vectorization. The equation for the top part relative to the lower one, establishing a necessity for bilinearity is XX. The dot product of the two XXX. The resulting equation becomes x2x2. This further implies multilinearity, an absurd major scale and a scalar microscale. The next thing we ensure is that the direction of the vectored identity in vectored space is going in the same direction as the absurdity and not in the direction of the xy counterfactual coordination. Is I equals, minus 1? In XY coordination or does it behave as an absurdity in the direction the consequential infraction implies? We take the limit as X goes to infinity in the XY direction for the square root of X, we get infinity. We then take the limit as X goes in our direction, negative infinity for the same square root of X and we get negative infinity. It becomes apparent that the square root of 1 is never the square root of minus 1 because I is the square root of negative 1 and not that for 1. It becomes apparent that it is universally impossible for our absurd to go in the xy direction. The probabilistic space for this is non-existent. Here, we discuss the most important definition for the assumption of solar irradiation burn that made explicable in the field of optics. We must consider the real effects of such irradiation, which unlike Einsteinian standards, must not, and cannot be separated from its causation. The definition for irradiation relative to optics is, an optical illusion which makes bright objects appear brighter than they really are. It is inevitable that I must postulate that in vectorization, the smaller, the closer is substantiate as the farther away an object, the more difficult to align or linearize curvature and structures of derivations and curvature. There is a tendency to have these much diffused large gaps of non-relativistic substantiation. Large and bright are with all intent, illusions of things indirectly relative to causation, confabulation, dogma, and delusions plaguing fallacious belief systems. and I will discuss further in later chapters how such misperceived objects large and bright need burn focus to substantiate. With the perpendicular parallax, I am inclined to be more in tune with Newton over Einstein, who maintained time doesn't matter too much in force functioning. While time does matter, it is apparent to me that time is an absurd, an effect inevitably relative to its causation, the closer, the smaller, and the more relative. The closer is never merely relative to time, as time is of zero dimensionality, it is relative to all applicable, differentiable, and integrateable functioning relative to time, fast, slow, small, big, cold, hot, low, high, and come what polar expendabilities, differentials there may be. If there is no causative relativity between Sun and Earth, there is no conditioning for the perpendicular parallax projecting a necessary zero dimensionality. There is no time. We can experience the multidimensional orientation of the effective consequential infraction that led to the parallactic relativity by converting from the one-dimensionality of the XY coordination relativity towards the essential necessary coordination. For this, we consider the equation of the conic progressions from the same point as in the last chapter. Replacing x in place of y in the equation for the parabola with x equals p, and solving for x squared. x2 equals 4px. At point 0,2, x2 equals 8x. The graph for this equation is largely surprising, as it is largely different from what the xy coordination projects. The xy coordination projects parabolas. What you get instead is the surficial parallelization resulting from the consequential infraction I described in the last chapter. Here are two perspectives in real-time vectorial orientation of the three-dimensional graphical projection of the parabolic equation. The dimensions here are x, x, 0, with the z-axis in the vertical at 0 for zero-dimensionality time. The parabola is still nowhere to be found in either. These graphical representations will be discussed further. Figure P0. Figure P2. The parabola is in the counterclockwise direction relative to the migrating third dimensionality x. The first figure is in one spatiotemporal process and the second at a different spatiotemporal other process. A non-entity getting in between figure P0 and figure P2 will be making a colossal spatiotemporal mistake. That parallax, the perpendicular parallax relative to the zero-dimensional point in the eastern port and relative to the third dimensionality x derived, owns Earth's magnetic moment and its inevitable electromagnetic implication. Einstein and Enfield, while repeating Faraday's experiment on the induction of electric current through changing magnetic fields, state on the purpose of discussing distinct influences on the fields with relevance to shape and sizes, that is, geometric space and its functional dynamics, let us imagine that the circuit in our last drawing becomes smaller and smaller, shrinking gradually to a very small circuit enclosing a certain point in space. Then everything concerning shape and size is quite irrelevant. In this limiting process, where the closed curve shrinks to a point, size and shape automatically vanish from our considerations, and we obtain laws connecting changes of magnetic and electric field at an arbitrary point in space at an arbitrary instant. And of the temporal effects, they concluded, the field here and now depends on the field in the immediate neighborhood at a time just past. In a state of disorientation, hostile relativity, and homelessness, and having witnessed such natural phenomenon and the implications of such, this observer that I am is apt to ask important questions about special relativity, time progression, vector progression, and so much more. Space in this context, I must distinguish as occupation prone rather than occupation space because we have achieved change in dimensionality in real time. The occupation propensity here is predeterminable, and the occupation space calls itself postdeterminably. These definitions are important for my discussions on the relativity of both the perpendicular parallax and the parallel diffusion effect as distinguished from the source of the effect. The distinction also enables me to incorporate Einstein's and Enfield's here and now, immediate neighborhood and especially time and time just past. I must note a possible contrarian mal-effect of the diminishing point thus induced. And here I will also retrieve a statement made by Einstein and Enfield about an observer whose purposes will be exemplary for future discussion on both the time series and the space series. They wrote, "An observer destined to spend his whole life in the rotating room for the purposes of inertia, and to perform all his experiments there, would have laws of mechanics differing from ours. Such an observer will be induced from time to time in the series to work for the purposes of our aims and for the life of it, against it. It is in such mode that we must consider what may be happening to arbitrary points in space and arbitrary instants with time. This is the inception of the space series determined to be occupation prone, occupation transitive, and occupation space rather than lacking causation and the direct and indirect relevance to its effects." This is the fifth of an 11-chapter preview for this book. Please support Distilled Waters, a mighty cause project against hopelessness and homelessness. Go to www.awlogix.com and give your support. Thank you.